Two Iraqis came here to this country, were radicalized.
For that terror attack overseas.
Total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
First of all, we should develop detention centers for them.
Everywhere there is Islam, you'll find women oppressed.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome, boys and girls. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to the first ever podcast of Raw Islam with Imam Azhar. We are very excited to be launching this project, and we are very excited to be here with you today to discuss Islam. And you know, let me do this instead. Ladies and gentlemen, and if you follow him on Facebook, he really is the most traveling imam on the East Coast, West Coast, and Central United States. Ladies and gentlemen, please say assalamu alaikum to Imam Azhar.
Hey, walaikum salam, Carl and everybody, brothers and sisters, boys and girls. This is Imam Azhar coming to you from Florida, and I am super excited with the launch of this new podcast, Raw Islam with Imam Azhar. And I want to thank Carl for doing an amazing job.
Oh, thank you. I just say alhamdulillah, because we all know that if it weren't for Allah, you know, with the talents he bestows upon us and things like that, that, you know, none of it would really be. So alhamdulillah. We've both touched on it now. So really, what is this podcast? What is Raw Islam with Imam Azhar?
So let's take a walk back into history, and that would kind of highlight both who I am and why we are doing this today. So I'm a Canadian born, I was born in Canada, and I was raised in a community at a time when Islam wasn't, widely accessible resources, from education to masajid, as they are in America today. And as they are in Canada today, we're talking about the early 80s. And at that time, when we were growing up, we would attend the mosque on a weekly basis, mostly on Sundays. And we would sit in the gatherings of scholars and imams that would either be from our local mosque or neighboring mosques. And they would educate the community on Islam. Now, the problem was that mostly, if not all, the scholars that I grew up with were from another country, and English wasn't their language. So we would be sitting down listening to a scholar speak in a language that we ourselves never understood. And that was the beginning of a dilemma. That dilemma followed as we became a bit older and we were in our teens, and friends would go and try to consult some personal affairs with the imams, but the imams would abruptly tell them off and tell them, hey, you know what? You shouldn't be talking like this. It's wrong, you know, or I need to talk to your parents. When I embarked on a journey towards acquiring Islamic knowledge, which is a story for another day, should we go with it today, Carl? Should we talk about it today?
The question then would be, how did you become an imam?
So how it happened was, growing up from a very culturally diverse background, where my mom is from Africa, from Uganda, with her parents being from three generations from Kenya, and my dad born and raised in India. When they migrated to Canada after marrying in England, they raised us in a manner that we were deprived from learning any of languages that they spoke conventionally amongst themselves. Their statement was that we should only focus on English because that's the language of the country that we reside in. Now, we weren't super religious. We used to pray often here and there. Ramadan was one of those times where we'd be kind of more super devoted. And the Eids, of course, were a time of festivity and prayer. But my grandmother from my father's side used to reside with us at times, and she would always insist that one of us should take it upon ourselves to become a hafiz. Now, Carl, you know what a hafiz is, right?
I believe that is one of the people that memorizes and recites the Quran, correct?
Correct. You got it.
Yay!
So now when she
I get an A today.
Carl's on with us. So basically when she used to make that statement, we would scratch our heads, my brother and I, as to, you know, what that really entailed. But my brother's focus towards that grew, and one day he came home from school, and he was in middle school that time, and he said to my dad, and I still remember that time, he said, "I want to become a Hafiz." And it was kind of a shocker because, again, we weren't from a super religious background. Reading the Quran was something that was much emphasized upon, but this was like to a whole new level. So in 1990, my brother embarked on his journey towards memorizing the Quran, and he went to the United Kingdom. A year later, my father asked me one day when he was taking me somewhere from school, he asked me, "What do you want to do in life?" Now, I was a younger brother, Carl. Were you a younger brother or an older brother?
So when I converted, I'm trying to do the math now here. I must have been probably, you know what? When I converted, I was 31. And the reason I know that, and I just love this story because you hear so many stories in Islam about the Prophet and the Hadith and stuff like that. And people say that, you know, Muslims actually do have a sense of humor, and the Prophet actually had a sense of humor. So
correct.
My favorite story, which is why I know the age I converted precisely, was there was an older woman that came to the Prophet and she said, "Will I be in heaven?" And he said, "No." And she got upset and she cried and she ran away. And he said, "Go get her and bring her back." And they brought her back. And the Prophet, peace be upon him, said, "You will not be in heaven as you are now. When you go to heaven, everybody will be the perfect age of 32.
Correct.
And the reason I remember that is because I converted at the age of 31. I learned that, and I spent the next couple of months, like 9-10 months, working really hard to make sure that I was in peak physical condition at the age of 32, so that inshallah, ya Rab, when I get to Jannah, I know exactly what it's going to look like.
That's amazing. You have older siblings, right? You have older siblings or younger siblings?
I am an only child.
Oh, you're an only child. Okay, Carl. So for those out there who have who are younger, there's something that we do as young ones is that we admire what our older siblings are doing. And many times we want to copy them or follow suit. So my brother went as a determined being to go and memorize a Quran. When my dad asked me that question a year later, I just said, "You know what? I want to become a Hafiz also." And lo and behold, 2 weeks later, my dad's like, "Okay, I booked your ticket and you're leaving." And I was kind of shocked, right? I was like, "No way. Did you actually do it?" But the good thing was that England at that time where my brother went to acquire his knowledge and pursue memorizing the Quran, that institution was blocked solid. Like there was a waiting list. So my father improvised and sent me to Louisiana where there was a branch of that institute. So here I'm going at a young age, and my father takes me down, and the principal who was running the institution out of England, and this was a branch of his, was there in Louisiana. And he met me there personally and asked me why I had come. And I said, "You know what? I'm here to memorize a Quran." He said, "What are you going to do then?" I said, "I'm going to memorize the Quran and go back home and continue school." Because think about this, Carl. You're growing up in a community where, you know, you've been to school for many years with the same children. You transferred from, you know, elementary school to middle school. Matter of fact, I was actually in a neighboring town when we moved to the next town over. And I started a kindergarten with a close friend who actually moved to the next town over after we did, and we ended up going in the same school. So we were together for the longest time. And, you know, that time the principal said, "You know what, I don't think you're going to become Hafiz right now." And
why?
I was just looking at his face, because there was approximately 40-something students there, and majority of them were already memorizing the Quran. And there was three students who had set their mind on becoming a scholar. Now, Carl, in Islam, to become a scholar, you know, it's unfortunate we can't really explain that anymore to you because you have all these crash courses. You know what I'm talking about, right, Carl?
No, I do. Absolutely. Yeah. You can go up on Sheikh YouTube and get all the information you want.
Exactly. You know, I was actually in New Jersey over the weekend. I was talking to a very dear couple that went Hajj with me a few months ago. And I was explaining to him this frustration that, you know, you're two physicians and you've, you know, made great effort throughout the course of your studies and then, of course, building your career. And now you open your door, a patient sitting there, and you tell them what you think is happening to them. You think, you know, you tell them this is diagnosis. And they turn around and tell you, sorry, doctor, I disagree, because on WebMD, it tells me that. So, you know, when I was told, now I'm going to go back to the scholar part, there's three. He goes to me, and I still remember his words. He said to me, you're going to become a scholar, and you could become a hafiz later on. And so, you know what I said to him? I said, okay. And that began a 10 and a half year journey, wherein through Louisiana, then back to Canada, and then 7 full years in England. We spent days after days, night after night, 6 days a week was our studies. We got 2 months off, 15 days before Ramadan, 15 days after Ramadan, in the month of Ramadan itself. And this was studying to master the 15 sciences required in order to better comprehend and grasp the Hadith and the Quran. See, the Quran and Hadith are the raw materials, right, but any person could open it up. But to comprehend it and to dive into it and to extract those gems from it, you have to understand from the linguistics and all the other knowledges which are necessary. So here now at the year of 2000, and Carr, we were the class of the millennium. So I remember that. We were the class of 2000. And at the day of our graduation ceremony, in a hall, which is the size, I want you to think about this, Carl. You watch football, right?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay. Okay. So football, take it, American football, take it like a soccer field. A soccer field is a bit bigger.
Yes.
But you're talking about a hall the size of a professional soccer field without a single pillar. Without a single pillar.
Wow.
Okay,
it's really good engineering.
And there's 3,000 people sitting there, and we read the last hadith of Bukhari, and that's where our Sheikh al-Hadith closed that book. And he told us, you've just put your foot into the water. You still have to dive in. So the journey has just begun. So 10 and a half years just taught us about swimming and giving us the confidence that, yes, we can swim. Now it's time to put it into practice. So when I came back to Canada, Carl, I said to myself, you know what? It was a time in Canada where many families from across the GTA, the Greater Toronto Area, had sent their kids off and were continuing to send their kids off. And every year, a new batch of young Canadian scholars were coming back. And I said to myself, I want to go somewhere where there is no one. I want to be a means and a resources at a place where people are deprived. And the reason I did that was because I can recall those days when growing up, I couldn't understand my imam. I couldn't relate with my imam.
Right.
I have utmost respect for him and all of them, actually. My first Quran imam was from Ghana, Imam Yusuf. He spoke English, but he was elderly, so there was a generation gap. The Mufti I studied my second year of Islamic studies, he was from Pakistan. He only spoke Urdu, but at that time, I kind of grasped a bit of Urdu from my first year of studies. And so, you know, I said to myself, I want to then give back to the generation what I, in my time, was deprived of. And I took it as a positive thing, you know. And I ventured off to Florida. And in 2002, I started my first full-time position as an imam, excuse me, in the town of Fort Myers, where for almost close to 6 years, I served at a city that 130 miles north and 150 miles south on the west coast of Florida, I was the only imam. I was the only qualified scholar. So basically from Tampa to Miami, I was there. And alhamdulillah, I had the ability to work through Bonita, Estero, Naples, and the surrounding communities. close to 6 years later, I moved north to Port Charlotte. And there I served for 8 full years as an imam. But Carl, the thing is that we know the need for understanding Islam is growing. Yes, we have great access to many or multiple resources of Islamic education, but we need to empower people through answering their queries and questions so that they can move beyond and they could become instrumental in their lives. So as an imam, I started seeing a disconnect between the services provided at the mosque and the need of the people. There was a little hole that it became, bigger, and now it's like a crater. So you have a physical structure, you have an imam, but the needs aren't being met. And if you look at an annual cycle of what's being discussed, so let's come around to the beginning of the year. We're going to talk about the Mawlid or the Milad, the permissibility or not. Then we're going to talk about Valentine's. We're going to talk about Easter. We're going to talk about Ramadan. We're going to talk about Hajj. We're going to talk about Halloween. And of course, we're going to top off the year with New Year's resolutions. And of course, Christmas is halal or haram. Can you say Merry Christmas or not? So there are many, masajid, where if you tell the people, count back through the years that you've been here, what were the common topics discussed? And I'm sure these were the topics. And it continues to happen every year. And of course, I forgot the main one, Carl, and that's the moon, right?
Yes.
Are we starting Ramadan today or not? So why can't we get beyond that? So that's why, we came up with this idea, Raw Islam, where we're going to talk about current issues. We're going to bring it up. We're going to talk about it. We're going to take input from the people who are listeners and those that they spread the message to. And we're going to come up with a solution or a game plan, and we're going to move on to the next thing. We can't stick in the same thing forever. So that's basically, in a gist, my life and also how important Raw Islam is to me, where anyone and everyone should have access to ask what they want and get the answers that they need so that we could continue to grow better and stronger as a community.
I will tack on there just another little story. As a Muslim convert at the age, again, I was 31 years old when I converted. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that you talk about the moon and Ramadan, because I remember my first Ramadan. Oh, okay, I have to start fasting now. Oh, no, wait, that's tomorrow. Oh, no, it was supposed to be 2 days ago. And it all comes down to like what madhab you follow, and it all comes down. And, I thought, oh, well, this just must be a weird year or whatever. But for the last, because I'm years old now, so it hasn't changed. It is consecutively Exactly. Every single year at the beginning of Ramadan and the end of Ramadan. It is the same exact conversation. And you're just brought to this point, which is why we're here, of, okay, fine. Can we move on to bigger topics now? Thank you.
Well, that's exactly, Carl. And you actually touched a key word that I think it's imperative that we cover: school of thoughts, jurisprudence, the sect or branch of Islam that you adhere to or you follow. And these things have become like key focus areas that we kind of write off each other because of it. If you're Maliki and I'm Hanafi, you're like, you're not kind of in the same game. But our Islam is much greater than this. These are all components, but Islam itself is something much bigger. But we're so stuck on, like, a person walks into a hotel, they got a room, right, Carl?
Yes.
But they are so much in awe with the lobby that they spend the whole night admiring the lobby. They don't get up to the room. So right now, we're still all stuck in the lobby talking about, is the fish tank better or the fireplace better? Or is a fire pit outside by the swimming pool better? Or is the front desk better? And you know what? I think we need to start going upstairs now. And so there's much greater issues on the table. And I'm not undermining these issues. Of course, these are core issues. Is when you talk about aqidah, when you talk about your creed, and you talk about jurisprudence and fiqh, and you talk about school of thought, yes, they're important, but their purpose isn't that our entire existence revolves around discussing those issues.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think just for clarification, because I heard you say it, and I remember the first time I heard it, is so the one thing that I want to make sure we touch on tonight is that this really is, at the end of the day, an interactive show. In the show notes down below, you're going to see an email address. Click that email address. It's going to be rawislam@vennetwork.org. Click that email address. Send us your email. Send us your questions. You know, below this post, leave your comments. We'll stack those up and we'll work. I'll make sure that Imam Azhar gets them so that we can answer them, so you can get the answers to your questions. And you don't have to be Muslim. If you're a non-Muslim and you have questions about Muslims, put the question down below and we'll get to the question and we'll try to get you an answer as best we can. But with that being said, I remember the first time I heard the phrase, and I might get this wrong, but I think it was the language in which you recite the Quran is called
the Tajweed?
No, I guess not. But it's the, because you said it, and I want to make sure that any non-Muslims listening don't get confused. You said the it's Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda?
Oh, the Qaeda is the,
because you said that, and I did, let's just make sure we're clear on what we're talking about here.
Yes. So Qaeda is one of the many books used. Traditionally, it's something from the Southeast Asian area. And the Qaeda means the foundation or the basis on which you begin your journey towards independently reciting the Quran in the language of Arabic. So Qaeda consists of Arabic letters and vowels, how to connect those letters, how to add the notes, the a, e, u, or the an, in, un, and other sound notes that are part of it, so that you can start reciting by the end of 34 pages or 40 pages, depending on the format of that book. You could then be well equipped and trained to open the Quran, which is anywhere between 500 to 800 pages. Again, depending on the print, you can read it. So the Qaeda is a book, as is Yassarna al-Quran, and there's many other books with different names, but they all serve the same purpose. How did that come up, Carl?
Well, because you said that, and I remember the first time I heard that, mm-hmm. that phrase, because you said that mm-hmm. earlier, you were like, you know, we're not going to talk about madhabs. We're not going to talk about this stuff. We're gonna talk about going upstairs. And that was one of the things that you mentioned in your rundown list. But I was like, I remember the first time I heard that, and I was like, yeah, Al-Qaeda, that's that thing on CNN that Fox News covers, right? And so just in case there's any non-Muslims listening or whatever else, we just want to be completely clear on what it is we're addressing.
Well, just to clarify on my side, Carl, I apologize if you heard wrong. I said aqidah, and aqidah means the creed.
Oh,
the
okay.
Core,
then
the,
I did.
The core,
I'm sorry about
foundations
that.
Of the faith.
No, I did mishear you then, but still,
sure.
If I misheard
you, we covered
you,
that too. That's important.
If I misheard you, somebody else might have. But now it's clear; it's all out there. No further questions on that. Thank you. No.
Now let me give you a little story here, and again, it goes to touch on the greater picture, because after 14 years, I walked out of the masjid as a full-time imam. I walked away from the position, and these were the concerns that built up and pushed me out. Not to say that I've abandoned the masjid, but I felt there's areas that need focus and a lot of service is required in those pockets. So at this current time, I'm serving at my capacity in interfaith outreach, in civic engagement, meeting with people across the spectrum, from political leaders to, you know, clergy members, to notable members of society, to members in each community, just to create dialogue, to create relationship, understanding, so that we can live harmoniously as people who have differences, but they're not fixated on those differences. They can see beyond those differences. So I'll give you that story. So Carl, like a few years ago in Port Charlotte, we were called by the school board, and apparently some parents had expressed concern of a history textbook that's being taught in the schools. And this, we will go into this in one of our segments. It was a concern raised by an organization here in America. Nevertheless, it had like some 30 odd pages talking about Islam and history, because remember, Islam is presence across the globe. So there's a lot of cultural and scientific elements to it, right? We're talking about the different cultures from the Chinese and the Africans, the Arabians, the Asians, and of course, the contribution of people in Islam from in means of science and medicine and so on and so forth. So there's so much to cover. And so realistically speaking, 30 pages or 40 pages isn't really a lot when you're talking about like a 1,000-plus book, right? A 1,000-plus page book. So there was a forum created, and the school board invited people, and they discussed how they would discuss this issue and decide if this textbook should remain or not. Let's fast forward. We're now in the final hearing, and I'm sitting down. The rules were set again. And I was sitting down next to this lady, and she was kind of like staring me down, like, you know, Carl, like she was like so venomously, you know, you could see that poison coming out. She was looking at me because, you know, I'm dressed up in my robe and my hat, and I pulled out my cell phone because one of the rules were we were allowed to take pictures but not with flash or noise,
right?
And
right.
So she started tapping my phone. Now, she had these nicely nail polished nails. She might have just got her, you know, what do you call those, manicures or pedicures? I think manicures, right?
She got her nails did.
She got her nails done, right? So she started tapping my phone, and I looked at her and I said, excuse me. She goes, excuse you? You're not supposed to have your phone. I said, I think I'm allowed to. And she goes, no, you're not. And she tried to grab it. And I kind of pulled it more to my right, and then I put it down. Then there was a little break in between. And sitting next to her was a very dear friend. She's from the Hindu community. But again, there was a great collaboration with the Muslim community and what she created with the Muslim community. And I said, hey, Sushila, how are you doing? And we just started talking. Now, this lady's sitting in between both of us. And she knew Sushila, but she didn't know me. So she asked her, do you know this guy? She goes, yeah, he's the imam at the mosque. And so she kept on looking at me. I think she believed I didn't speak English. I feel that she felt that I couldn't speak English, and I was from some, you know, mountain of Afghanistan or something.
Yeah,
so she had
yeah.
these, you know, negative perceptions that piled up on her. And so that broke the ice. And so little down the conversation, she goes, I want to ask you a question. I said, sure, go ahead. She goes, do you guys have a mosque here in the area? I said, yeah, we do. It's just off of Harbor View. It's right by the I-75. She goes to me whispering, she goes, can I visit? I said, of course you can. She goes, I won't get shot, would I? I said,
yeah,
look, the first time I'll give you a go pass like a Monopoly.
Oh, no.
But I can't promise you the second time. So that's exactly, you know, that level of misunderstanding can go a long way in creating great divide that generations won't be able to fix. It's nothing violent. It's nothing factual. It's just ignorance that continues to fester and create fear amongst people.
Yeah. No, and that's, again, that's why we're here. And that's mm-hmm. why we want to make sure that this show isn't just for Muslims. It's for non-Muslims as well, so that we can reach it. I hate the phrase because Congress has completely ruined it for me. But we want to be able to reach across the aisle to help our to work with our brothers and sisters of all faiths and no faiths and every sort of other orientation, because we have to learn to build a society. And the best way to do that is to get to know our neighbors and just to come to an understanding of the reality of life around us. And, you know, the one thing that I just want to make sure, please tell me she laughed when you told her that and you didn't scare her.
She was stone-faced for a second. She's like, she was shocked. And then she saw me laughing, so she started laughing.
Oh, okay, good. Woo!
So, you know,
that's one of those risky jokes. You don't know if the person's going to get it or not.
That's so true, Carl. And that's why, you know, as you just said, we're in a very unique time in our world today. And being who we are and what we're known to be, we're up against some challenges. But those challenges aren't, and they shouldn't be perceived as negative. They should be perceived as opportunities that we let slide for too long. So as you said, reaching out, you know, getting to know each other once more, creating an open line of dialogue, reaching across the aisle with all human beings, irrespective of who they are, what they profess, what they believe, what's their background, what's their social status. This is something that we have a golden opportunity to do. And I think we can do it. And once we do Inshallah. It, it's going to show how strong of an impact this could make. And I'll give you a quick example, Carl. In August 13, 2004, I believe it, yes, 2004, Hurricane Charley hit Florida. And if you guys go back and Google Hurricane Charley, for those that weren't here, it was a powerful hurricane. You know, it was supposed to go to Tampa, and they evacuated the city of Tampa to Orlando. And this hurricane, I still remember 1 o'clock p.m., right before the Juma prayer, the notice was it stopped. And it stopped right outside of Fort Myers. And it started coming inwards. There are two prestigious islands, and I'm sure the listeners may know one of those names. One is Sanibel and one is Captiva. And of course, Pine Island, which is a very rich place when it comes to fruits and agriculture and exotic fruits and foods. And this hurricane started ramming itself. It just made a quick turn east. It literally stopped going northeast and it just started coming east. It literally cut Captiva in half, devastated Sanibel. Then it crossed over Pine Island. It missed us. It didn't start going north, and it went into Port Charlotte, where I was imam later on. So, of course, we got the bands, and the eye of it missed us, but of course, the hurricane was a very powerful one. A few weeks later, I was invited by Governor Bush and the White House staff to participate and represent the community in a prayer in Port Charlotte. And at that time, when I stood up on the stage, I froze because we had literally 2.5 minutes to make a prayer. And I made a plea to the people. I said that, you know, we are now walking outside and we're seeing the devastation all around us. And we're seeing faces of people that lived beside us for so long, but we didn't even know their names. So let us all go and meet our neighbors. Even though we have nothing to offer, let's give a hug. You know, yes, the government and the governor are pouring resources in, FEMA's on the ground, and the response was amazing. It was literally amazing. But I told them that despite having all those resources, the cup is only half full. When we reach out to each other, we console one another, we hug one another, and we get to know each other, the cup will be full. So I think that's what we want to do with this program. We want to make sure that the cup of each and every human being is full.
Inshallah. And we will take that this week as your final thought. And so I had a quick question for you.
Sure.
Being on the internet as often as I am, I've been seeing a lot of this stuff about a Humza Yousif video or talk that took place at a conference. And I'm seeing where people are really in support of it. I see that there's a lot of people that are really upset about it. And then there's a lot of people that are just in the middle of the road who just don't care either way. But of course, you know, the people that are supportive are loud and the people who are upset are loud. So can you tell me what that's all about?
Well, again, this highlights more than just the statements or the words of Hamza Yusuf. At, I believe you're talking about RIS, the Revival of Islamic Spirit 2016, that took place, as it does every year, in Toronto, Canada, my hometown. I think in that he made a statement the night before, I think it was Saturday night, in which he made a statement, which I think we want to talk about this next week, Carl, that was perceived by some as a derogatory statement towards people of color, and other people stated otherwise. Scholars differed greatly about it. And I think the next day he came out and clarified his stance. But, you know, it does teach us a lot. I think this will be our next segment.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Tune in next episode, where we will digest Hamza Yusuf's statements, his clarifying statements, and we'll see where we go from there. But with that being said, I want to say thank you to Imam Azhar for being here. I want to thank all of you for downloading. I want to thank all of you for listening to this, our premiere episode. Make sure you email us. Make sure you leave your comments below. Make sure that, you know, just let us know. Do you have a question? Are you Muslim? Are you non-Muslim? Do you have a question about Muslims? Go ahead, shoot us an email, leave us a comment, and we'll get to your question, because this show is about community and it's about answering the true essence of Islam, the raw Islam, if you will. How was that?
That's amazing.
So until next time, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we will, from Washington, D.C., and from the great state of Florida, we will say, Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum, everybody.